providing a second chance for high school dropouts. That's the mission of Youth Build Evansville. I'm David James, and next on 2 Main Street, my conversation with case manager Leah Sconiers and vocational instructor Andy Hartman. After completing a six-month course, students receive a high school equivalency, construction skills, work certificates, and receive a paycheck while they learn. Guiding them on the path to success is one instructor who can relate to these dropouts. He's been there. The latest workforce program starts up next month. And we'll hear about the many alternative learning programs in the Evansville-Vandenberg school system, including the Harwood Centers in each of the public high schools. 2 Main Street is next, presented by the Berger Wren Group at Bayard Private Wealth Management. From the WNIM Tri-State Public Media Center in downtown Evansville, I'm David James and this is 2 Main Street. If you know a young person deserving a second chance, this is your chance to make a difference in someone's life. Twice a year, Youth Build of Evansville launches its Workforce Development Program, targeting high school dropouts ages 16 through 24. It's a six-month-long program teaching hands-on construction skills, with graduates earning a high school equivalency and work certifications. It's a second chance to finish one's education, learn a trade, and here's the kicker, get paid while learning. Here to tell us all about Youth Build Evansville and the second chance opportunity are case manager Leah Sconiers and vocational instructor Andrew Hartman. So guys, welcome to 2 Main Street. Good to have you here.
Thank you.
Great to be here. Thanks for having us.
A second chance for these young people means the promise of a better tomorrow, an opportunity to start over. So what's the Youth Build story? Leah, let's start with you. It's part of the Evansville Housing Authority?
Yes, it is. We're funded through the Department of Labor. And so we work with students, like you mentioned before, 16 to 24. So we have them split up into groups because they'll go to education twice a week, and then they go to vocational twice a week. So that's where they get like their hands-on experience with construction and education. They're learning their five subjects. Mm-hmm. Pretty much we do a vetting process. So we have small orientations where we'll meet with them, the potential participants that applied, and we'll go over the paperwork together so that, you know, they don't have to take it home and it get lost, that type of thing. And then we have them write a short essay on why they want to be in Youth Build, and why they would be a good fit. And so then based off of that, you know, we're reading their essays and we're seeing the drive and the potential, and then they come back for a TABE testing. So that's just a test for adult basic education. So that's not necessarily to like get them into the program. That's just to see where they are academically.
Mm-hmm.
So then once, you know, that test comes back, we can have support and see where they are, to have that support for them when they start the program.
So when did Youth Build start?
It started back in 2003.
Locally, yes.
Locally.
The program started in 1978 in Harlem, New York.
So it's a nationwide program.
Actually global.
Oh, global now.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. When it started in 1978, it started as a single initiative. It was a single program, and by 1990, it had grown to a national program, and then several years later, it went global. I think we've got 400 programs worldwide,
mm-hmm.
Serving somewhere around 20,000 students a year.
Oh, that's incredible. That's incredible. Now, construction skills, we're talking about obviously getting a job after this program is completed. The rewards after completing the six-month program, you get two certificates and this high school equivalency. And tell me about the stipend that they get, Andrew.
Yeah, it's $40 a day while in the classroom, and then they're paid an hourly rate, which is adjusted annually when they're on the job site. And right now we're working 2 days a week in the field with Habitat for Humanity, and we're always looking for other partners to work with.
Now, nationwide, of course, there's been a gradual decrease in the number of high school dropouts. That's some good news, down to about 5%, I understand. And, of course, the main reasons for dropping out of school, there could be a number of them. What have you learned?
That sometimes it's the crowd, it's the amount of people that's in a classroom. They necessarily don't have that one-on-one or, you know, a smaller setting to kind of have that help. that they need while they're in the schools is what we're finding.
And if they get a bad grade or something, you get disappointed? And
yes, they do have behavior outbursts, and that tends to be a lot when they're short staff in EVSC schools, you know, to tend to just one individual instead of hundreds.
And of course, you know, I guess the family dynamic too plays a role in in what they're going to do with their lives, right?
Definitely.
I guess if their parents didn't finish high school, mm-hmm. That's a factor as well. And I understand homelessness is also a factor too.
Yes. We have some people that come needing shelter, and I give them the resources and try to find them a shelter to go to.
Mm-hmm. Now, the future for a high school dropout, that's pretty bleak. Someone without a diploma or work skill, what's their future like, Andrew? I know you've been there.
Yeah, I think some estimates suggest that there's a $20,000 difference in annual income between a high school dropout and a high school graduate. And with our program giving these kids training in the building trades, it really breaks that barrier to not just graduate high school, but to enter a real skilled trade where, you know, frankly, right now we can make a lot of money.
All right. Yeah. Now, the second chance students, they range in age from 16 to 24, boys and girls, young men and women.
Mm-hmm.
How many girls you have in the program?
Well, not very many. Mm-hmm. This cohort we've had about a couple, uh-huh. and then the rest would be all boys.
Yeah. So you, I guess the women are, they're certainly welcome, aren't they?
Oh yes, always welcome.
Mm-hmm. Now, do they have to have any prior construction skills, Andrew?
Not at all. Just the desire to learn, participate, and just do the best they can.
Now, do agencies refer these young people to Youth Build? How does that work?
Sometimes we get referrals from AIS, and then other times it's just word of mouth, mm-hmm. you know, our flyers going around if we go to different events and people come by our table and find out about it.
Now, it's twice a year you have this program. Mm-hmm. Is there a class limit?
We typically try to have about 25 per cohort.
Mm-hmm. Now, you talked about the vetting process mm-hmm. to get these students involved. Now, you want students, of course, to be committed to learn and succeed. How do you judge that?
Well, based off of them showing up, their eagerness, if they apply, they're showing us they want to be here. If they're showing up to our orientations, they're showing up to their scheduled TAPE testing, we see the drive there. Mm-hmm. We have a week called Rise Week, leading before the cohort starts. So that's just trying to see how they are with the program, if it's a good fit. We all observe, you know, we get a list of each participant that we have there and kind of watch if they're participating, if they're engaging with what we're doing, or if they're not, or they're kind of standoffish, and try to see if our program's a good fit for them. So we do that for the first 5 days, and we feed them. So they enjoy that because they're getting a little bit of everything from Domino's to Hacienda. So, yeah.
Is there transportation to the program?
Right now, no. We haven't been giving them transportation, so they are responsible for getting to us. But we do offer bus tokens because mm-hmm. We have a city bus that comes around that area as well.
How is Youth Build funded?
Through Department of Labor.
It is, okay.
And locally with Evansville Housing Authority, Advantix Partnership,
yes.
and the City of Evansville as well.
Okay. Now, where's the classroom?
1321 Edgar Street in the Jacobsville neighborhood.
Really? Yes. Okay.
So we're in the same building as like the Section 8 people for EHA.
So who are the instructors then in the classroom?
We have an education coordinator, Misty Licky, and then we have a job developer by the name of Jose Morales, and then Andy's vocational. I'm case mm-hmm. manager, and we have an assistant and program manager as well.
And the work sites can vary, right, Andrew?
Yeah, yeah. I think just last week we were on 3 different work sites with Habitat for Humanity. At least one of those we worked with the homeowner on site, which was really special to see, you know, the person who's going to live there in this home with their family. So we work in all phases of construction with Habitat, from the foundation, cleaning it out before the floor goes on, getting the floor on, putting the walls up, and then any finishing touches that are available.
Now, of course, safety, I guess, would be a big issue on the sites, right?
Absolutely. So before we ever even touch a tool in the classroom, we do an OSHA 30 training. And I teach that in-house. And then we just have some refreshers as we go. When we see some issues that cause concern out on the job site or in the workshop, we just go back and reframe that training in those moments.
So, I mean, do you kind of oversee this when you go to these sites and see what possible problems are?
Yeah, absolutely. And then I just use my own work experience in the building trades to say, hey, this is what's coming or this is what could happen. You know, when I do see things improperly, I try to take it all the way back to the book or even to what the violation may look like if an inspector were to come out and see it and say, hey, look, this is something we have to correct. We can't do these kind of things in the industry. And this is, you just kind of really try that real world training right there on the spot.
Yeah. Now, Leah, how do you sell this program? Are you speaking to different groups? How do you do that?
Yes, I've talked to different groups. We went to different resource fairs. I'm actually working with WEOA with their radio station. With our orientations, we each staff member gets a chance to speak to all the people there and the parents that come with them.
My guests are Leah Sconiers and Andrew Hartman with Youth Build of Evansville, and we're talking about a second chance for high school dropouts, a chance to learn a trade, a high school equivalency, and, of course, a paycheck while learning. Now, coming up, we're going to learn more about my guests, how they got involved in this program, some success stories, those are always fun, and the link we talked about between homelessness and the dropout rate. I'm David James. This is 2 Main Street, and we'll be right back. Welcome back to 2 Main Street. I'm David James. My guests are with Youth Build Evansville. We're talking about the Workforce Development Program giving high school dropouts a second chance at success. Leah Sconiers is a case manager with Youth Build. Andrew Hartman is a vocational instructor. Now, one of the risk factors we talked about of being a school dropout is homelessness, a graduation rate of about 68% nationwide, and those without a high school diploma or a GED are 4.5% more likely to experience homelessness themselves. So it's a cycle. So have you worked with many young people experience homelessness, Leah?
Not a whole lot since I've been with Youth Build, which is great.
That is good.
Right?
That
so just good. A few here and there.
Now let's learn more about my guest, Leah Sconiers. You are a native of Evansville. Is that correct?
Yes,
where'd you go
I
to
am.
School?
I went to North High School. Not the fancy one, but the one on Stringtown.
That's where my daughter went.
Yes.
She went to that one. She graduated the year before the new one opened.
Yes,
Yeah, so she has stories about the old North. So you have a career working with adults and children with disabilities. Tell me about that.
Yes. So I started out working with RescCare, working in group home. And then I went over to Easter Seals and worked in more of like the supportive living. So those individuals that lived on their own. And then I worked with Arc of Evansville for a little while, working with both group home and people that lived on their own as well. I was a case manager for Department of Child Services for 9 hard months, but it wasn't for me, and that's okay. But I needed a little more work-life balance, so then that's when I stumbled across Youth Build, and I've been here a year now.
Mm-hmm.
Yes.
So what are some of the struggles of that job you talked about?
Oh, my goodness. Just the removals, a lot of fatalities. You know, it was just overwhelming because it was just nonstop.
And you take that home with you too?
Oh, yeah. Yeah. It was just, you would stress about it because you'd be worried about, well, did I do the right thing?
Mm-hmm.
You know.
Well, one. Now tell me about RISE, R-I-S-E.
So RISE, that's resilience, identity, strength, and endurance. So that's the week that our orientation week, more or less, from all the people that came to orientation would come that week. So we usually could have quite a few of them. It could be up to 30 or so kids. And we have different people come and speak. We do a lot of activities to kind of get to learn each other, some icebreaker activities. They eat, you know, they enjoy that part because, like I said, it's could be Hacienda or Domino's or whatever. So it's just trying to get to learn each other and see how they fit with the program. And we gauged them off of a chart, you know, with participating and their effort and things to see if they will do that once the cohort begins.
Because you're making an investment in these children,
these
young people.
Yes.
And you want them to succeed.
Mm-hmm.
But, I have to ask this question. Do you have any dropouts in your dropout program?
Yeah, so during that RISE week, some of them, you know, is this what it's going to be like, you know, and yeah. for the most part. We're going to be like this every day, five days a week.
Got to make that commitment,
and they
right?
make that decision during last week that this may not be for me. And that's okay, because the good thing about that is that if they ever want to come back to us, that they could. But once they're in our system, we can no longer accept them. So say they go through Rise Week and then they start our cohort, they would no longer be able to come back if they decided to leave.
Okay. Now, Andrew Hartman, vocational instructor. You've got a great story here, Andrew. You were a high school dropout?
Yeah.
Tell me about that. Why'd you do that, Andrew?
You know, for a lot of the reasons we mentioned, family, school. I think I had a 1.22 GPA when I left, 24 credits out of what I think at that time was 40 needed.
Mm-hmm.
I wasn't going to graduate.
What high school are we talking about?
Well, I went to Bossy, Boonville, and Castle.
Okay.
Shout out to all my teachers. Who, I'm sorry. I really am sorry. And you know, to kind of be back in their shoes and looking across the table or the classroom at a me, it's really a special place to find myself. But I ran away at 17, joined a construction crew down in Tennessee. I was gone for several months. And when once I returned home, it was a little bit of a journey in between here and there because I didn't come back willingly.
Were you a runaway?
Yeah. Wow. Real deal runaway. Actually, and you're welcome to edit it out. But I was actually in a group home at 17.
Yeah.
And I had gotten into some trouble at high school. And that was really kind of that trigger that I said, I'm in deep.
Mm-hmm.
And I called some friends. I said, hey, I got to go. I got to get out of here. And we took off. And like I said, I'd lied on my job application to this construction company long before the I-9s and all the workplace.
So they didn't know you were 17?
No.
Okay.
I said I was 18. I you know, transcribed one of the numbers on my date of birth. And
so do you tell this story to these applicants?
Yeah. Once we're at that level, we're at that stage, I try to make it clear from day one that I know.
You know what you're going through.
I know. And I really do. And like I said, it's such a, to have landed right where I'm at is really powerful to me.
Oh, yeah. I can imagine. Yeah, I can imagine. So how did you get involved with Youth Build then?
You know, at the time I had been working with the state of Indiana. I was providing a crisis training through the Division of Mental Health and Addiction.
How did you get involved in that?
Well, like Leah, I spent a good portion of my working career in human services as well.
Mm-hmm.
I had taught crisis prevention to the employees at the state hospital. I was part of a group of trainers, but I was a crisis prevention trainer at the state hospital and really took a liking to it. I really liked to, I used the position as an advocate. And then at some point, the position at the state of Indiana or with the Division of Mental Health and Addiction became available, and I applied, and it was kind of it was another one. It was like, I can't believe I'm here.
Mm-hmm. So you had to get your GED, didn't you, eventually?
Oh, man, I'm sorry, yeah.
You kind of skipped over that.
Way back there, once I made it back home after 17, after leaving at 17, I came back home, and I think really before I was 18, I got my GED. Now I went to college for a little bit. It still wasn't for me.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I've ended up with around 100 hours of undergraduate training in and out of the building trades and human services alike, which if you go back and you look at the Youth Build model, it's really the perfect candidate, that half counselor, half tradesperson.
Mm-hmm. Boy, Leah, you're good to have. Glad to have this guy on board, I'm sure.
Yes, very.
He's been there.
Oh, yes.
He's been through the wars.
Yes.
That's great. Now, when these young people complete the 6-month workforce program, they receive their high school equivalency and an NCCER certification and an OSHA 30 certification. What are these certifications?
So NCCER was created by contractors in the residential sector who were finding that, never mind, we didn't have enough candidates, the candidates we had weren't qualified. I mean, they would show up, they didn't know how to use tape measures, hammers, even the most basic skills. I mean, they may be able to lift things and carry them across a job site, which that's where most of us individualize plans to help them earn their high school equivalency.
So they have a lot going for them in this program.
Yes.
They have a lot of different things going on. Now, the skills and trades these young people are learning, what are some of the trades?
I would say basically the core component is really just this introduction that's going to help them go into a number of trades. I try to compare it more to like a basic carpentry class, but there's really so much more to learn about carpentry than to call it a carpentry class. But we're getting them an introduction to all of those basic tools, tape measure, saws, hammers. We're not getting too far off into electrical or plumbing, but they are getting to see that work being done when we're on the job sites.
Mm-hmm. Now, when these young people, do they have jobs waiting for them, Leah, when they graduate?
So we have a job developer, and he helps them build a resume. He helps them narrow down to find a job that they would like, and they apply for them. We go through mock interviewing to prepare them when they do have an interview. And so, yes, majority of them do end up finding a job once they graduate our program. We've had IBEW Local 16 come in and speak to them. We've had the Laborers Union. And one of a success, we had a participant that ended up going to the Laborers Union after graduation and is still there working.
Mm-hmm. Now, what exactly is your role as a case manager?
So I work with them one-on-one and develop an individual education plan based off of their tape scoring and like their strengths and weaknesses, whether it be behavioral barriers or educational barriers, where they're not understanding Andy or they may not understand education. And we try to find out where them struggles are. Now, a lot of them, some of them may come with IEPs or 504 plans. So that also helps to support them educationally. Mm-hmm. And so we work one-on-one trying to keep them, you know, sane through the program for the 6 months. And then also they come to me if they need resources of any kind. I've helped individuals find clothing. I've helped with food banks, homelessness with the shelters. So just pretty much the need of the participant is really all I support.
Now, coming up, we have some success stories from the folks at Youth Build, giving high school dropouts a second chance at success. I'm David James. We'll be back with more stories. Stay with us. Welcome back to 2 Main Street. I'm David James. If you are just joining us, my guests are Leah Sconiers, case manager for Youth Build of Evansville, and vocational instructor Andrew Hartman. Youth Build offers a 6-month workforce development program targeting local high school dropouts ages 16 to 24. Graduates learn a valuable construction skill, high school equivalency, and work certifications. It's a second chance at success. Has to be incredibly rewarding to you guys to see these young people turn their lives around. Is that probably one of the reasons you're involved in this, Leah?
Absolutely. Because, I mean, some people come from some pretty heavy backgrounds, abandonment. They've been through foster care, you know, but to see them walk across the stage earning their high school equivalency is, it makes us peacock proud.
Tell me about that graduation ceremony.
So graduation ceremony, we usually have at Willard. Is it Willard?
Yep.
Library. Sorry, it was my first one last year. And so they have pretty much a speaker. We had the mayor come and speak to them. We've had Courtney Johnson, Rick Moore, and they all speak and say something to each, you know, the group of the graduates. And
the family's there.
The family's there. We have food for them afterwards, and it was just a good ceremony.
Mm-hmm. Andrew, I guess you get a sense of pride just to seeing these youngsters make it through this program.
It's pretty incredible. You know, just remembering our graduation, some of the candidates that I think a lot of the time didn't have the belief in themselves.
Mm-hmm.
And finally, and their parents, families for that matter, really had their own doubts.
Yes.
And to be able to hold out that hope for them and you know, being a part of that moment, is really special for me especially. And I know that It is for Leah, too.
Now, as you've seen some success stories over the years, I'm sure, Andrew, you just started with this, Leah.
Yes.
Tell me about some of the people that started that you thought, well, are they going to make it through this? And they made it.
You know, I can't really get into a whole lot of specifics about participants. But
you don't have to use any names, of course.
We've had some even out in the middle of a cohort that we
What's
had,
a cohort?
A cohort is that six-month period.
Oh, that's what you call
it? We bring
it?
Them in, we introduce them to the program, and then the whole training we call a cohort. But even out in the middle, there were some doubts.
Mm-hmm.
Where maybe they were doing some things that some of those past behaviors showed up while they were with us, and we had to question ourselves whether or not we wanted to continue a relationship with them. And that's where it comes, the case management, and maybe that piece of personal experience that goes in and says, hey, this is who this is made for.
So do you have to do some come to Jesus moments with them, Andrew?
A lot of times.
You sit down and
we
say,
call
okay.
We call them a lot, yes.
And they get the message then, I guess.
Oh, yes.
If you narrow down on them. Okay. All right. Now, do you do any follow-ups on these graduates?
Yes. So we follow up with them for a whole year after the six-month period is over. So they have access to resourcing, job developing, anything they need support with.
Mm-hmm. Are these youngsters fast learners, Andrew?
You know, I think in some cases, yeah. But some, no. That's where that individualized plan comes into place. Mm-hmm. We try to figure out as early as we can what kind of individual needs they have and try to adapt ourselves to them. Mm-hmm. We know that if they were capable of these broad changes, they probably would have been successful. So we know that the system, our program, is what needs to change in most cases, not them.
Mm-hmm. And we have talked off mic about the many alternative programs available for high school students in the Evansville area,
mm-hmm.
the different programs.
Yeah, you know, with the proliferation of the SIC techs, the new techs, AIS, students now have so many more options than they had back even in 2003 when our program came to town. And I think that's impacted both our enrollment and our success rate because there wasn't this buffer in between us and EVSC or the school corporation.
Mm-hmm.
AIS now acts a lot like a buffer where participants that would have been really successful in our program in the past
mm-hmm.
are now taking a stop at AIS, and many of them are completing their education there and graduating. Some of the people that hands-on education serves them best are now being served at a program like SIC Tech and New Tech. Both models that are incredible that we kind of get all in-house all at once. We do that hands-on model as well as some of that alternative approach that AIS has.
Mm-hmm.
We know that true success is happening holistically, not just this one-dimensional cookie-cutter model.
Mm-hmm. Well, how does Youth Build make this community a better place to live?
So at the core, you know, 50% of our program is education, you know, complete that high school equivalency, because we know that without that high school diploma, kids' success is really limited. 40% of the program is vocational training in hopes that we can attach them to a vocation. But that other part that 10% is all about leadership. And that's really the heart, is transforming these young individuals into leaders that ultimately are going to first change themselves, that will then transform their communities. I think back in the 70s or 80s, when this program was founded, that was the real vision. And that's the vision we're still trying to adhere to and see through today.
Now, when you go to work every day, Leah, what's your goal? What's your mission?
That I reach somebody that is ready to throw in the towel. I just want to make sure that I reach someone. Having those one-on-ones with them, letting them vent and trauma dump if necessary.
Trauma dump, yeah.
Just pour your problems out all on the floor. You know, we'll deal with it. We'll piece it together and see how you can stay here and be
now that,
okay.
That I guess your prior experiences and training, it helps with that, doesn't it?
It does. It helped a lot.
Mm-hmm.
Yes.
So Anybody that you want to talk about, any without a name, that really had some hard life experiences, and now they're on the track to success?
We did have a participant that was going through some homelessness, kind of bouncing around different friends and family, ended up finding a job, and now was working on finding their own apartment. So they've helped with, you know, receiving resources from us. We've did letters of recommendations for them to kind of give them that extra push. And they said they appreciated us being there as a support for them. They looked at us more of a family than just an alternative place.
Of course, I mean, you guys, everybody deserves a second chance. I know you certainly are living proof of that, aren't you, Andrew?
Third, fourth, fifth, whatever it takes, man.
Yeah, because you really had a rough start, and that included the juvenile justice system.
Right.
So what are the, do the people's jaws drop when they hear your story?
No, I mean, I think maybe some of the staff and maybe some of our partners are kind of taken aback by the success story, but no, I think that a lot of our participants are in that same boat.
So they know.
We are getting folks that are involved in the juvenile justice system, kids that have had trouble at home, trouble at school. I try to build this bridge between where they are and where I'm at, and that this doesn't have to define us. There is an opportunity. You don't have to just be a dropout. You can make those changes necessary and really get ahead. It's not a setback, right?
Right.
It's just an alternative path.
Mm-hmm. Now you go to the site and you have construction skills. What are some of your construction skills?
So I'm a carpenter by trade. I did a couple of years a few moons ago in a local carpenters union. But I've been in and out of the trades, like I said, since 17, both working with the local union as well as other residential contractors locally.
So you know when they're doing something wrong on the site.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. No, I mean, I'm not an expert builder by any means. My trade was in commercial carpentry. It wasn't in building homes. So I'm learning a lot along with them. But as far as the safety goes, I think that is... across all industry, you know how to climb a ladder. You know when someone is using a power tool, especially dangerously or inappropriately, and having that experience of how to have that conversation with this individual is really important too. It's not just, hey, you're doing that wrong. It's knowing how to say that.
So, Leah, are you at the construction sites?
I have not been to this one with Habitat, but I did go when they built a gazebo for an apartment complex in Princeton. So that was fun, carrying wood and passing it along with my little safety hat on and my glasses.
So, yeah, I guess the Habitat thing, that had to be really a unique experience. Mm-hmm. And you see the actual person who's going to be living in that facility, watching it come to life, really.
Yeah. Yeah, it's pretty awesome.
And it's good for the students, too, to see that they're doing something, helping someone change their lives as well.
Right.
Mm-hmm. And building a better community. I mean, once these people graduate, they're going to have jobs. Mm-hmm. They're going to be able to support a future family.
Yes.
So that's definitely a plus for the community.
Oh, yes.
They're not going to be a burden on society. They're going to be part of the society.
Right.
So what's the big reward for you guys with Youth Build? I mean, what when you leap and go home and say, hey, this was a good day?
I think just their eagerness to want to be there and learn would be my reward. I'm like, you know, we're making it easy for them to understand and fit in, because a lot of them were in places where they didn't fit in, right?
So, what's the future of Youth Build?
Oof. I hope that we are able to take on a lot more kids that just regular school wasn't for them, and to let them know that they can do it because they are our future. So.
And how can people learn more about Youth Build?
Well, advertisement, word of mouth, you know, we're out all the time I went to an event on Saturday for a potentate ball and was passing out business cards. And they're like, this is a party, you know. But I'm just trying to get it out.
And you have
there.
A website, of course.
Yes, we do have a website
and
as
that
well.
Explains the application process as well.
Yes, it does.
Okay. So, Andrew, your final pitch for Youth Build. Why would some young person get involved? You're going to be there helping them out, aren't you? Supporting them along the way? Kicking their butt if they're not doing the job?
I'll never kick anybody's butt. We'll definitely hold them accountable. You know, if you're someone that has not found success in traditional pathways, give this a shot. Give yourself a shot. Don't give up. And, you know, your future, our future collectively depends on it. And the building trades are lacking future employees significantly. It is, I don't want to say desperate, but, you know, as our workers continue to age and retire, there's not enough people filling those roles. Mm-hmm. And that creates a couple of opportunities. One, it's a job or a career pathway, but it also results in the wages for those positions to continue to increase.
Mm-hmm. And it's a lifelong skill, too, and you just get better at it.
Yeah.
And the pay, I know I've had some construction projects, remodeling in my home, and I know there's some people are getting paid some pretty good money.
Oh, yes.
So that's an incentive as well, enough to support a family quite well.
Yeah, it's a much different pathway than what we've been preaching for the last 50 or 60 years about going and getting a college education.
Mm-hmm.
You can go get an associate's degree right now in one of the building trades and make an incredible living.
Mm-hmm. Well, that's great for everybody. That's right. Well, my guests have been Leah Sconiers, case manager for Youth Build of Evansville, and vocational instructor Andrew Hartman. The mission of Youth Build is to build a better community. And thanks again, guys, for all the work you do. Applications are now being accepted for the next workforce cohort. High school dropouts ages 16 to 24 may apply. These include young people from low-income families, those in foster care, in the juvenile justice system, and those who may be better suited for non-traditional education paths. And Youth Build says participants get paid to earn. The motto is, earn while you build a better future. My guests with Youth Build Evansville mentioned the many alternative learning programs offered by the EVSC, saying those programs have changed the learning landscape. And there's a new program in the five EVSC high schools, a school within a school, the Harwood Centers. Here to tell us about the Harwood Centers, how they are helping these students in advance and achieve with smaller class sizes and more individual education plans, is Jason Wepkenberg, Communications Officer with the Evansville-Vanderburgh School Corporation. So, Jason, welcome to 2 Main Street. Tell me about this decision to, transition the
Sure.
Harwood Center Preparation High School to open these Harwood Centers. What was that decision like?
Sure. Well, thanks for having me, David. And, you know, really for us, we serve between 21 and 22,000 students.
Now, the third largest corporation.
Third largest district in the state of Indiana. And really our charge is to support all kids, all students, K-12, mm-hmm. pre-K as well. And, you know, whether you're a student that's looking at college and career and university prep at high school, or whether you're a student that maybe for whatever reason is struggling, and anywhere in between, our job is to take you to the next level and prepare you, and we have so many programs to do that. You're asking about for students that may, for whatever reason, have some struggles, our Harwood Centers. And, you know, really that change from a single location, it came out of the fact that we were looking, how can we support these students better? And sometimes when you're taking students from each of the five traditional high schools and sending them to a location, you know, that's challenging for those students. They're having to go to another location. They're leaving their schools if they're wanting to be a part of activities. They're friends. We all remember the friends that you have in high school, and you have that bond, and you want to be together. And so we thought, really, rather than having this single location, let's take that and really transition that from a single Harwood school location to five Harwood centers within each of the high schools. And it's a great way for us to provide targeted support for students, whatever that looks like for every student. I mean, obviously the challenge is to move forward their academic progress so that they're earning their credits, because the name of the game for these students is to graduate from high school so that they're ready for the next step of their life.
What's happened to that standing building on First Avenue? What's the status of that building?
So then we took that facility, which for forever, as people in the First Avenue community would remember, was Harwood School. It was a K-8, and then it was a middle school, and then, of course, it transitioned to Harwood Support Center and Harwood School. And now it is New Tech Institute. So New Tech is really our sixth high school. It serves about 300 students. It's really focused on a smaller learning environment, project-based learning. Students collaborate all of the time. Very popular program. Been with us for many years now. It had been housed in the back of the Southern Indiana Career and Tech Center on Lynch Road. So now they have their own standalone school. They are a standalone high school. Students graduate from New Tech, so they have a gym and an auditorium and a lot of classroom space and areas for them to collaborate. So that worked out very well for them as well. So again, it's all about, for us, maximizing all of our programs that benefit students.
Well, it definitely is a changing landscape in education,
isn't
it?
Very much.
It really has evolved over the years. Now, you said the Harwood Centers are in each of the local public high schools.
Correct.
Who are the teachers, and what about the class size?
So really, it's a little bit non-traditional. I mean, it is non-traditional. Students can be in there. Typically, it's 3 hours. It could be longer, the staff, and it would depend on the number of students in each school that are being served and what the need is. I mean, they're working with those students. They're setting academic goals. They're working with them to really provide that additional layer to ensure that they are successful. We want to make sure that these students have everything they need to earn their credits, to do well in their courses. So think of it as really an extra layer of support. It is a much smaller environment. It's more targeted and intensive support. So the students and the staff that are working in these centers really form those relationships. Students, they don't have to be in it forever. You know, it's not something like that. They typically come in at the semester mark, whether it's at the beginning of the year or the beginning of second semester. We do have some students that may need to come in at the quarter mark, halfway between the beginning and the end of the semester. But again, it's more targeted, it's more individualized, it's putting that layer in place. And for however long the students are in that program during the day, then of course the rest of the day they're out with their classmates or they're able to participate in an activity. Of course, if you have a student who needs more intensive support, they may stay in that longer, almost up to the full day. So it really is on a case-by-case basis based on what those students need.
And I think that's one of the advantages, that the students stay in their original high school with their classmates and the extracurricular activities, too, they're used to.
And you're right. That's really a driving force for so many of our programs. You know, you hear us talk a lot about our innovative programs, like the Academy of Science and Medicine, like Early College High School, the Southern Indiana Career and Tech Center, Shepherd Academy. All of those programs are really based on the notion that they're specialized programs targeted on, for example, science and medicine, focused on really students who have a love and a passion for science, but it's still a half-day program. So it's really the best of both worlds for those students, where they spend half of their day in the innovative program, half of the day in their home school with their classmates they've gone to school with forever. Nothing different than that for the Harwood Centers. For these students, they still get the best of both worlds. They get that targeted small environment assistance and support, yet they're still at their school as opposed to spending all day at another location.
Relatively new program.
It's been around for a few years now, yeah, as far as the new version of this.
Mm-hmm.
And it's gone very well.
Yeah, I was just wondering about the success rate. What's the reaction?
Getting great feedback. You know, at the beginning when we announced we were changing, there was some misunderstandings. People thought, oh, we're closing. And we said, we tried to make it very clear, and we had a lot of ongoing conversations with families and students. We're not closing anything. We're just changing this. We're making this transition, if you will, as mm-hmm. we've said, from the single location to multiple locations. But again, at the end of the day, our focus every day, wherever students are, is providing the support they need to get to the next level, whether that means university, whether that means earning credits, college career success. That is a huge thing now in the state of Indiana, something we're laser focused on. And then another aspect we're putting in place, we've had for some time, is our virtual academy. That's been around for
Tell me about that.
Yeah, it's been around for well over a decade. And we're even looking at that to say, you know, what are some changes we may need to make to that? Because it's a very successful program. Students, you know, virtual learning now, especially since the pandemic, is something that a lot of students are interested in. I mean, we still love to have students and think wholeheartedly that the best environment is within that school environment where you're actually interacting with your teachers, you're collaborating with your students, with your classmates. But there are some times where students need virtual education for whatever reason in their life. We've got that with EVSC's Virtual Academy. And again, we're even looking at ways that we can continue to evolve that program throughout the spring. We're really taking a look at that because we want to make sure that we're maximizing that support and that options for that option for students and families as well.
So you got a lot going on, Jason.
there is a lot going on.
In the works?
Well, I think for us, it's, you know, I've referenced the Academy of Science and Medicine, for example. We've got a huge project going on. That is actually a program housed at Central High School. It's for students all over the EVSC, actually students even out of the county. We have a lot of students that will come into Vandenberg County for that program to get that intensive work on science, maybe even medical prep if that's what they're interested in. So a huge addition going on in that. It's going to have its own separate area within Central High School, more lab space, more classroom space, more lecture hall space, more areas for students to collaborate. Talked about Virtual Academy, looking at making some changes to that program as well. Every one of our programs, including fine arts, athletics, you name it, I think the success for any school district in the country, especially in the state of Indiana, where, as you alluded to, things have changed over the years, we can never take our foot off the gas as far as trying to get better. We take so much pride in what we offer, but every day we're asking, how can this program be better? Or is there a program that we don't offer or in its current format could change to provide more support, more challenging academics, more intensive support for students who need it? And that's the name of the game for us right now.
Well, it's the Evansville-Vandenberg School Corporation. There's a corporation.
Tell me
about how many schools we have, how many employees, how many teachers.
As you said, we're the third largest district in the state of Indiana. We have 40 schools, and that doesn't include our additional programs like I've mentioned today. We have about 3,400 employees, so we are certainly one of the largest employers in southwestern Indiana. We have between 21 and 22,000 students, so a lot going on with that. You know, when you look at all of our properties and all of our programs and all of our employees, you know, we always say, we want to provide the best opportunities for our students and our families. We want to be the educational employer of choice for anyone out there who is either a teacher or wants to work in a support staff position. Because of all of our employees, we're about half certified. That's folks that have a teaching license, admin, counselors, teachers. And then we're about half support staff. You know, we have so much in terms of custodial, secretarial, maintenance workers. And so, yeah, it's a big enterprise. We've been successful for a long time, and we're going to make sure we continue to be successful into the future.
How'd you get involved with EVSC? What's your background, Jason?
Well, this is actually my 31st year working for EVSC, so I guess I always tell people I must like it or I wouldn't have stayed around this long. So actually a product of the school system. My wife and I met in the second grade, so we go way back with the school system. My late father was a teacher for us, all in the same building at Highland Elementary for 40 years. During his career. And so, yeah, now I started a long time ago as a teacher and moved into school administration many, many years ago, about 26 years ago.
Well, tell me about your teaching career. Where'd you start teaching?
I actually taught for 5 years. It was Evans Middle School. Now it's Evans Elementary School. So taught there, was an assistant principal for a year, spent many years then as a principal at three different schools, and then I guess this is my 11th year in central office as the chief communication officer at the district level.
So you come to this communications job with a pretty good background of what's going on, I would assume.
I always say that, you know, I certainly had the pleasure of experiencing a lot of things in EVSC, and you know, we've been chatting about this. There's so many. My job, I guess, is easy. There's a lot of great things to talk about because when there's so many powerful things to share and to talk about it, makes it very, very easy to be the person that is kind of the one that's out there talking and sharing these experiences. And this is just something we take a lot of pride in. We want all of our families to know about this. You know, we're a countywide system. That makes us unique in the state of Indiana so that we serve from one edge of the county to the other, top to bottom, east to west, all within the city of Evansville as well, plus Vandenberg County. So, you know, we really have a lot of 40 schools that are serving unique populations of students in the communities that they serve. And, you know, here in Evansville, each one of our schools kind of has their own personality, mm-hmm. their community, because, right. you know, everybody always thinks West Side's a school like Wrights High School, so much pride there. But then, you know, Bossy High School, so much pride there, and all of our schools. And they just, that's something special about EVSC. They each have their own identity. But we're certainly all on the same page moving forward to be successful for students.
Well, shout out to all of my EVSC schools. I started out at Lodge Elementary,
okay.
went to Glenwood,
okay.
and then Bossy. So that's my EVSC background. Shout out to all the great teachers I've had over the years, and there are so many great teachers out
what
there right now.
What a difference they make. They, I mean,
they really do.
Sometimes, David, I don't think they understand the difference that they mm-hmm. do make. You know, they do that like all of us. They do their job. They come in. They work hard. And when you're in the midst of it, I think it's hard to step back and appreciate that. But our teachers, whether they're in their first or their fifth year, whether they're in their 30th year, mm-hmm. to think all of the students and families they've impacted. And I was just talking to one of our longtime administrators today in central office who was a teacher and a building principal for many, many years. And she just told a story about how she ran into a student, former student recently, and this was many years ago when she taught kindergarten, and this student, who now of course has grown, has children of her own getting ready for high school, came up to her and remembered her. Now, you know, it's easier maybe to remember a high school teacher face, but
sure.
you know, when you go all the way back from this adult who was 5 years old at the time, and you know how powerful that is for someone to come up and say that 30 years ago you were my kindergarten teacher and what a difference you made, and even said something to the effect of, I still remember you made me love being at school. And that's powerful. So I hope all of our teachers get to experience and hear that type of thing, because they do make a big difference.
Jason Wepkenberg with the EVSC, thanks for being my guest on 2 Main Street.
Always happy to be here. Thank you.
I'm David James, and this is 2 Main Street on WNIN-FM, your public radio station in the Tri-State. 2 Main Street airs Thursday at noon and Saturday at 11. And previous shows are on demand at wnin.org.